Okay, we'll get started. If anyone else joins, we'll just let them announce themselves. We do these every 2 weeks, and these are these informal conversations for about 30 minutes. And our next one's going to be in April already, in April 9th, so everybody in springtime. And they're informal, hopeful. we've done on these calls. We do different things during the time around the RFPs. We talk about RFP things. We're moving into this time when RFPs are over, and we're going to be talking about some of the really good programs around the country to get an idea of what everyone's doing and exchanging ideas. And we usually start off with GLO. And GLO, any news that you've heard that from D.C.?
Oh, yeah, I talked to Joe this morning. And he wanted me to remind everyone, if you are a grantee, which I know there are some on here today, if you are a grantee, please remember to report in acres and make sure that you have no work packages awaiting your approval, their approval in the system. The other thing he wanted me to mention is that the grant announcement is still anticipated to take place in May. Both successful and unsuccessful applicants will be notified at that time. No other clues, just that's all he had to say about it. So
we're entering this funny period. What happens in Washington is it focuses on the fiscal year, which is October 1st. And if you start backing things up, they have to get the money out the door September 30th. So if you back that up, it takes Grant's office a couple months to get all the paperwork going. And then if you back that up, it takes another couple months to do the review and evaluation, and, of course, a couple months before that to get the RFP. So what happens is if you say October 1st and then start working, someone just joined?
Hi, Lou Sicari from Rochester.
Hey, Lou. How are you? Good. Okay.
Good.
If you back up, if you start in October, you start to have RFPs requested in November and December, January, February. Those are the power months when you're looking at federal grant RFPs that are awarded on an annual basis. And then as you move towards spring, you know, they become due. So by March, everything's due. So, and then that gives them April, May, June, July, and then August, and get it out the door. So what the only thing they do sometimes, when I used to work in government, they'd do a sweep and then see if there was any money left over, which sometimes there is and sometimes there isn't. So the agencies will, the EPA might go through the agency and see who's got residual funds. Sometimes it's a nice time to get extra money put into a grant where they'll say, well, we got these funds and we'd like to get them cleaned up, so we'd, you know, could we add to the grant? And so if you're lucky, sometimes that happens. Often it doesn't, and you hope it doesn't take money away from the grants. So that's kind of the way this federal government has operated on this. So we're right now in this beginning of this quiet period where everyone's busy reviewing those final grants to get them out the door by May and June, July, and then award the money by September. Our program, the HMTRI program, operates under a different thing than the job training. It's K-6, and I think I announced the last couple of weeks about the K-6 announcements, and it's a research and development research program. They had last week they had a webinar, and it's as competitive as it is for the job training grant. 60, 70 people will apply, and some are in our area, and some are in research and other community research projects. So we're submitting our grant so we can keep doing what we're doing. And those are due on the 15th, I believe, so or 18th. So those are coming up, and we'll probably be notified also in June or so if they fast-track it. And those will be awarded so they could have the annual meeting sometime in the fall for existing and new grantees. So in terms of new projects and money that's happening in Washington, not too much can be happening in the next couple of weeks and in terms of new RFPs coming out. There is some activity that we always suggest people do is in terms of the education grants that I put in the newsletters, the environmental education grants. There was also an RFP for some collaborative environmental justice grants that we had talked about earlier. It's good to keep an eye on these programs, and I've always encouraged people to go after those environmental education grants if they can. A positive thing, Gina McCarthy testified to the Health, Environment, and Public Works Committee about the EPA budget, and of course, they're going for a strong budget. Congress says they're not going to listen to what they have to say, but often it does provide a guidepost for the priorities in EPA, and it actually gives us an idea. They're going to ask for about $7.89 billion for the whole agency in 2015, next year, and about $1.33 billion of that will be for Superfund cleanup, leaking underground storage tanks, RCRA activities. Those are the people that our participants go to work for. So that's really encouraging. It's a nice, hefty amount. They want to put $9.2 million in emergency response and removal, and about $600 million, almost $700 million in chemical awareness, which we'll all notice that last year they started including a chemical awareness in our grant proposal. So next year we'll probably be hearing more about both the emergency response and the chemical awareness parts of our training. So those budget figures are indicative of what might be happening, and it's fairly positive. So all things, unless we get some huge cuts by Congress, I think EPA is doing okay, and we'll see as time goes on. We'll keep an eye on that. Today, it's great. We're going to have a chance to talk to a Workforce Investment Board. Ray Sullivan's with the Northwest Regional Workforce Investment Board up there in snowy Connecticut, Waterbury. They've had a great program. They were awarded a grant in 2009 and 2013. And Ray's got a lot of experience, not only working with the Workforce Investment Boards, which we've talked to other grantees that are WIBs and work with WIBs, but has a good foundation in health and safety. So, Ray, why don't you take over and tell us about your program?
Well, thanks very much, Mike. And I know this might be redundant for some of you that have more mature programs, but for new grantees, I think hopefully it will raise some questions and some opportunities for you. First of all, I'm Ray Sullivan. I'm a project coordinator for the Northwest Regional Workforce Investment Board. We're out of Waterbury, Connecticut. We cover the northwestern section of the state. Our system started in about 2008. So we've been at it a while, and we run what's called the funnel system. And as the name may imply, we recruit, and a lot of people go into the funnel, and then through its process, it whittles out people who are basically the most difficult to employ, and what we come out with are some good trained people that we can offer and provide opportunity to. So our system recruits, it assesses, it trains, and it provides job search and placement assistance in the construction industry. Our funnel started and it foundered for a while. Luckily, we were able to get the 2009 Brownfield grant, and that really helped bolster our program and allowed it to get going and mature to where it is today. We've had other grants. In 2010, we were awarded a State Energy Sector Partnership grant. In 2012, a Green Jobs Innovation Fund grant. And again, in 2013, we were awarded another Brownfield Training grant. Our process is pretty basic. We hold orientations a couple of times a month. We hold those off-site. We have a site that is in the center of the urban part of the city of Waterbury, and that helps us recruit. We get about 20 to 40 new recruits a month, So if you do the math, we've had over 2,000 people come into this job funnel since the start of our program. All applicants fill out a information form. Data all goes into a database. They provide us with basic documentation, driver's license, Social Security, birth certificate, high school diplomas, et cetera. We make sure they've been registered for selective service if that applies. The key is good assessment and good relationships. I would say relationships are absolutely key. We have strong relationships with our partnership organization, city government, area educators, the trade unions is an important partnership, and obviously that connection with employers is very important. We make sure we try to give a good product to our potential employers, and in order to do that, we got to make sure we have the right people. So the assessments are important. We make sure that, for example, people have the right reading and math aptitude. We provide what's called a CASA exam that measures that. If people fall short on that, we offer a math class. It's held twice a week. I just checked the attendance sheet. Last week there were 17 to 20 people in that class. We offer an individual service plan to sit down with a person and find out where they want to go, what they think of themselves, and what their short-term and long-term goals are. That's all documented, and that's a one-on-one discussion. All applicants have to be drug tested prior to a training program and prior to employment. We also have assessment as part of our training as well. We have what's called the 30-hour pre-training regimen. At this 30-hour pre-training, if you have gone through our process, provided the documentation, showed an interest by maybe taking math classes or doing well in the CASA exams, you're invited to basically quarterly, maybe five times a year, we'll hold a 30-hour training that offers 0-10 training. We'll do workplace success training. We'll also have within that training maybe an introduction. We'll bring some of the trade unions in to talk about life in construction, and we do some more construction math. We may alternate once in a while with what we call a green tradesman certification training. That's a 16-hour construction labor and sustainability course. It kind of mirrors LEED in the way it's presented. So by the time you get through with that, we know who's going to be on time, who's going to be late, who has the right attitude, and who we want to be able to present to potential employers. Now the real training offerings come into effect, and people basically try to choose a pathway. And right now, Brownfield is one of our major offerings. We offer a 200-hour, five-week course. I won't go into the specifics of that training unless asked. I'd be glad to, but it's an important a training that really gets people ready for building remediation and brownfield remediation. We also offer solar PV installation training. We have a provider that does NAPSEP training. That's an important certificate if you want to go up on a roof and do solar installations in this area. Same thing with thermal installations for the plumbing trade workers. We offer both a shorter 40-hour training, and we've done a couple of groups of apprenticeship training that's 300 hours that includes 168 hours of electrical training that are needed to qualify for apprenticeship if you're going to do PV installation. We do quite a bit of Building Performance Institute training for building analysts, envelope training, multifamily training. Now the new thing is a home energy score training. And of course, this training includes all the testing and blower door field test. We've done lead training, lead grain associate training. I actually went through that and have a certificate from the U.S. Grain Building Council that certifies me as a lead grain associate. We've also done wastewater and clean water certification training. You know, why do we do these things? Obviously, at the end of the day, we want to provide placement opportunity and job opportunity, and that's what it's all about. In our first 2009 brownfield training, I think our placement rate was between 90 and 95%. And that, I think we had 61 or 62 people go through that program. So the process is very successful. It's a little tougher today, but because we're working with a more basic skill set out there, but we hope to mirror those numbers with our new grant. The whole thing is really strategizing about jobs, and that's a local decision. Waterbury is an old mill town. We have a lot of old businesses and factories that have to come down, so tank removal, brownfield remediation, that's an important aspect of job placement in our neck of the woods. We've been fortunate enough to have a major building process go through locally. We've put over $250 million into rebuilding our education system in the city of Waterbury. And that led to a lot of opportunity because we worked with the city to institute what's called the job ordinance in the city of Waterbury. And it gives preferential treatment to Waterbury residents, and it gives preferential treatment to our program because we administer that for the city of Waterbury. So that's a local strategy that has been very, very successful. We always have to be looking ahead. Right now, the big thing in Connecticut is natural gas pipeline projects that are being initiated by the gas utility companies. $8 billion is going to be spent here in the next 10 years rebuilding the gas pipeline infrastructure. So right now, we're laying the bricks for that. We're aligning ourselves with the laborers union, the operating engineers and the plumbing union, and we're helping to train their benched workers right now so that we can provide some backfill opportunities into those unions when this project starts to drain their benches and they're looking for new recruits. And I think that's a solid strategy. We've used it before, and we're hopeful that it works again. And again, it's that relationship. We have a great relationship with our local government, great relationship with the trade unions in our area, and that's really the name of the game, to provide your participants with the best opportunities. And that's about it, Mike. I open it up for questions.
Yeah, you know, Ray, it's interesting because you are you formally the WIB or part of the WIB or associated with WIB? What would we be?
I work for the Northwest Regional Workforce Investment Board. That's the WIB.
Which is unusual because there might be an office in the building and you have to act as coordinator, but you've really got a lot of project control over this whole operation, which is very interesting.
Yes, we do. And Kathy Watt, our project director, this whole system really started in Hartford, Connecticut. They have a terrific program up there run by Yolanda Rivera. And it's taken hold in the state of Connecticut, this job funnel system. And I don't know where it might be in other parts of the country, but it really allows us to take several programs and you know, leverage is important, and financial leverage is important. You know, we use almost 100% of our brownfield training dollars goes into training. not administration, because we try to get those and cobble those dollars out of different opportunities.
Now, who does your training? Is it do you hire consultants? Do you have a work with a community college or a university?
We do a little bit of both. You know, Mike, I've had the opportunity since I helped start this job funnel in Waterbury to help develop those things. And we use the unions for training. We have a local provider here, IMTI, who does, they're one of these, they do plumbing training and electrical training. It's all private training. But when you go with that to them with a package deal, you can get some great rates, and they can help you develop some great short programs and do it in a pretty economic fashion. We also have worked with the community colleges. That's a little less reactive and a little longer term. But, for example, we've worked with our local community college for BPI training, and we've worked with a college over in Central Connecticut for wastewater training. So whoever's willing to put together a good training program at a really reasonable price is who we would be willing to contract with. But we write all our own contracts with all the training providers. You know, it got to be tough to get an OSHA 10 provider in here or an OSHA 30 provider in. So we took one of our first brownfield graduates, and we sent them to training school, and he now runs a very successful statewide OSHA training school. And he does all our OSHA 10 and OSHA 30 training.
That is fantastic.
So, and that's something, you know, as your program matures, you know, try to get your best to start their own businesses. And that's a great way to get new people entree into the construction industry.
We've seen several grantees who have students in their program, and they start their businesses, and they start consulting firms, and they hire their students.
Absolutely.
Talking about.
Absolutely, and that's the way you build partnerships, and these years have a way of going by quicker than you want to believe, but those partnerships mature quickly, and it not only results in one job, they result in job after job after job with really the same entities. You could get a lot of jobs out of one small company as long as they're growing and the people within it grow and expand.
Now, how is your relationship, say, to the one-stops? Do they refer people over to you, or are you pretty much on your own in terms of...
No. We partner with the one-shop. If we find... You know, the advantage to our system right now is that we don't have to do a lot of recruiting, because there's no recruiter like word on the street that you go here to get a job. So, but when we do need to, we partner with the One Stop, and we'll go to their information sessions and present our opportunities. We have our pamphlets out there, and we get a lot of referrals from our one-stop partners, and a part of the Workforce Investment Board is called Workforce Investment Board outsources the Workforce Investment Act management to New Opportunities of Waterbury, and we partner with them a lot too, and we get a lot of referrals from them. So again, that's an important relationship.
Sounds like Connecticut's really interested in this. I was reading a news release that you've just got a new director, and he said we just have a lot of this is on the waterways. And in fact, his name is Sullivan. Tim Sullivan was his name, and he's the first thing he said is we have a lot of industrial sites that we really can rehabilitate. We're going to put a lot of emphasis on rehabilitation of sites and remediation. So it sounds like you're really up on it. And, of course, you are. I want to thank you for your response to the question we had about respirators. It was well put. And it's interesting in terms of respirators. And do you health screening, I assume, and you do?
We do. It's an important, listen, if you're going to go for a brownfield job, the employer's going to want to see your medical certification, along with the OSHA 40 and maybe lead or asbestos certification. They want to see that that medical certification as well. You can't get a job without it, not in our area anyway.
And how do you do that? Do you actually pay for their physicals? Or
We do. That's part. Actually, Mike, the Brownfield grant pays for that, for those people that go through that training. We build it right into the price with our contract with the training provider. And they have to make the appointments for our people. They have to follow through and make sure that they get those certifications. And as we get all the certifications fitted to us, the medical certifications are in there with it.
And I think you, and people could ask you for a copy of that. I think it might be different in each state, but I think you have a form that works well in terms of medical certification.
It is, and the best thing to do is to go talk to an employer. Somebody, maybe somebody who does remediation in your area, and say, listen, what do you have to hire a person? And you know, they all know. The one thing I will advise to be careful about is that, and I think this is federally, is that the employer is responsible for providing the respirator. Because the respirator may be specified for whatever work they are doing. We get asked to provide respirators on regular occasions, and you have to be very, very careful about that.
And of course, they are ultimately responsible for 40-hour, and in the end, the employer is responsible for everything. De facto, they tend to take your certifications and run with those.
Yes. One last thing, Mike, that I think we do that hopefully as other sites mature in their training programs, we offer refreshers. We do them like 3 times a year. You know, HAZROPR, you have to refresh every year. Your lead and asbestos license have to be refreshed. You got to watch out for the OSHA 10 now expires after 5 years. So those refreshers are an important part of our program, and we offer those on a regular basis.
It's a great way to keep your retention, keep track of what your students are doing to offer them those. Are they free or do they?
We offer them for free, yes.
That's awesome.
If you've gone through our program and you got your certification from us, we will offer that for free. We do OSHA 10s like every month, and we offer those for free to anybody who's really interested.
And
I have a
how
question
do you?
Yes.
Do you use your EPA funding for the refreshers? Because I've heard, I'm sorry, this is Christine Campbell from Glover Park Technical College. I've been told that it's not forbidden to use it for refreshers, but it's discouraged because they prefer to have you use it for new training. Do you use other funding for your
We use other funding for that. We use leverage funding from another grant. We also, I said that we're involved, we are the administrators of the Good Jobs ordinance in the city of Waterbury. And right now we're running about 13 city projects for the city. And that provides funds for us as well. And a lot of those funds are just used for client support.
Thank you.
So you really are an insider in terms of City Hall. I mean, it sounds like you're really connected to city government, and they're supporting you.
Well, yes, they are, because we supported them it became evident. Jobs is a big political issue in any municipality, And I would encourage everybody to get involved in the political dogfighting a little bit. Waterbury is a real political town, and it's a lot of fun. And our current mayor, Mayor O'Leary, was very supportive of this ordinance. And he's pounded his fist on the table a couple of times to make sure to contractors to tell them that we want Waterbury people to get our jobs or you're not going to get the work in our town. And that type of emphasis helps. It helped him get elected, and he's helping us provide jobs and employment.
There's nothing like having politicians come to your graduation, whether they're congressmen or mayors. And particularly, we're coming up, these graduation classes are coming up now, and you're probably in the middle of a cycle right now, but, you know, with election coming up, it's you always want to invite your congressman and perhaps the mayor or someone in the mayor's office. You'd be amazed. They might send you a letter that says, sorry, we can't make it, but you'd be amazed when they show up.
That's true.
And the thing about that is it gives you visibility because when the mayor comes, so does the news crew. And when the news crew comes, then it's in the paper or it might be on the local news that, you know, the Waterbury or Tacoma, we're training you know, new people that wouldn't have jobs now for productive remediation jobs in the city, making a better place to live, you know, and then all of a sudden, of course, that helps your recruitment process. But it also helps when it's time to seek out leverage funds. People want to be part of that. So it sounds awesome. Any other questions that anyone has from Ray? If you do, just put them on the listserv or just write in. And Ray, we appreciate your responding to some of these. It's been really helpful. And whatever anyone talks about, we share with everyone. So, and this whole funneling, you're doing everything really neat because you're doing not only the funneling, but you're doing what some people call the tryouts or the pre-test, the pre-course. So you're doing both the funneling down and the combining all of these techniques to get your best students. So
that's right.
It's not surprising you got such a good placement rate. That's awesome.
Well, you have to have good people. You know, the if an employer gets a good and useful worker out of your program, it's not bad to get the second one. But if you give them a bad apple, you'll never get another job out of them.
Good point. Good point. Sure. And that's the same for getting good recruits. They'll
yep.
recommend friends.
Yep.
Right. Well, good. Well, our 30 minutes is up, and we're going to continue on the 9th of April. So I hope things warm up for everyone. And
yes, please.
Yes.
That would be
nice.
Yeah, for us especially if we're cold.
Yeah, we'll kind of blow some of this hot weather up north if we can. So.
Thank you.
Well, thanks again, and we'll talk to you all soon.
Thank you.
Thanks
Mike.
Again, Ray.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, Ray. Thanks,
bye.
Mike. Bye.
Everyone.